This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, as we are about to get underway week three of the college football season. We do have some big time showdowns, as we all predicted. South Florida and Miami will be one of the biggest games of week number three. Shout out to the Bulls, hell of a win, and we'll talk much more about that game with our next guest, Chris Felica, who will join us here in just a little bit. Always love catching up with the Bear, Chris Felica, and we're going to play a little game called Overreaction or Market Correction. One thing I'm going to do throughout the season is take a look at those look-ahead lines. DraftKings throws out about 10 lines for the following week on Wednesday, and then they take them down. The games get played, and you see a new line thrown out there. So we're going to take a look at some of them. Big movements in Clemson, Georgia Tech. Big movement in Georgia and Tennessee. Big movement in South Carolina, Vanderbilt. A little bit of movement in Miami, South Florida, and LSU and Florida. So a whole lot to get to with the Bear, Chris Felica. So he will be joining us in just a little bit. On these episodes, early week episodes, remember the Wednesday episode, we'll have two guests now, Wes Reynolds, as we continue Wednesdays with Wes, and also Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Preview. So that'll be the Wednesday episode. The Thursday episode, as you all know, the full breakdown of the card with Matt Eumanns. So we will continue three episodes every week talking college football. But I do want to talk some situational spots in the early week window. Also try to update on injuries. That's something I'm going to work hard on this year. We'll close out the episode with some injuries to close things out here. But some situational spots for week number three. It's an interesting week. We do have some big games, you know, LSU, Florida, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. As I said jokingly, but it is true, USF and Miami. And look, I know there's been a lot to do about the AP poll. I don't care about the AP poll. I would just say do better. There are a lot of people that need to do better on that AP poll. But regardless, that's all I'm going to say about the AP poll. But situationally, I want to jump into a couple of spots. And if you watched the games unfold this past weekend, you might be immediately looking at, all right, we got to fade Mississippi State after Bruce Dickinson came through. Got to have more cowbell. And they did. And what a crazy game. I was sitting at a friend's house on Saturday night, fully anticipating Arizona State to punch it in from a yard out. Thankfully, they kicked a field goal, so I had a breath of fresh air there, a sigh of relief. And ultimately, what happened? Mississippi State somehow won the game. So we're going to fade Mississippi State. Problem. They play Alcorn State. That line probably won't be out till Friday. It's going to be enormous. I don't know if I really want to mess around with that. Same with Baylor. What a comeback win. Shout out to Sawyer Robertson. Incredible start to the year for Sawyer Robertson. They play FCS Samford. Michigan State, double overtime win over Boston College. By the way, post-game win expectancy for Michigan State, 25% in that one. They play the Mighty Penguins of Youngstown State. And then UNLV, very good win or bad loss for UCLA, however you want to define it. Dan Mullen's squad, boy, have they quieted the overreactions as the poor performance week one or week zero against Idaho State turned around, beat Sam Houston, who might be terrible, and then beat UCLA, who also might not be very good. But still, UNLV 3-0, they're off this week. They do have a weird travel spot next week. They have to go to Oxford, Ohio for a 9 a.m. Pacific time game. So the old body clock game there for the Rebels, and we will see how they ultimately play that one out. The one letdown spot that I do have circled is going to be Iowa State. And I actually texted with Chris Williams, who a friend of the show, Cyclone Fanatic, does a great job covering all things Iowa, Iowa everywhere. He and Chris Hassel have a podcast. But I texted him earlier this week. I said, why is Iowa State playing at Arkansas State? He said it was scheduled about over a decade ago, like 12 years ago, it was a 2-for-1, but ultimately they are going to play at Arkansas State. So a very weird spot there. Iowa State, you think about the stretch they've had. They started the season in Ireland. They beat Kansas State. They come back home. Some people in the gambling world, me, might have said, hey, this is a sandwich spot against South Dakota. And they won 55-7. Then they beat Iowa 16-13. Shout out to the hook there. Iowa State, by the way, got themselves a kicker. Now you're playing Arkansas State the week before a bye. The number's sitting at 21 for the old Red Devils in this spot. Iowa State has been one of the great stories of the early portion of the college football season. Is this a classic letdown spot heading on the road? I will say this. Arkansas State, I think, really wanted last weekend to go better. Playing an arch rival, or I don't know if they're an arch rival, a team that they look up to in Arkansas. They gave up 630 yards to Arkansas last week in a game played in Little Rock. They got absolutely hammered in that spot. This might be a hold-your-nose situation. Arkansas State plus 21 against Iowa State at home. And then a couple of sandwich spots I just wanted to throw your way. Oklahoma, great, great performance. I was impressed by their defense. I thought Brent Venables and that defense did a really strong job against Michigan. And I don't know if I owe John Mateer an apology. I was maybe skeptical of how he would play going to Oklahoma, taking a massive jump from Wazoo to Oklahoma. The dude's the real deal. Now, is he going to win the Heisman Trophy? Because he's the betting favorite now to win the Heisman Trophy. I don't know. I don't have any bets on John Mateer to win the Heisman Trophy. I thought he was overvalued heading into the year. I thought there was another guy coming from the G5 up to the P4, Devin Dampier. Shout out to my guy. We're going to keep it quiet. We're on to Wyoming. Don't know when no one needs to look over there. Devin Dampier down to 20-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. But he was great. Got to give credit where credit's due. John Mateer was awesome. He's a wrecking ball, and he's going to be a pain in the ass if he stays healthy. And I really hope for the sake of college football that he stays healthy. That is a dude that puts his body on the line. Is he going to do that this week against Temple on the road? I don't know. I mean, talk about a weird spot for Oklahoma. So Oklahoma gets College Game Day to come to town, and they beat Michigan. They cover the number. Shout out Humans. He had Michigan and, or excuse me, Oklahoma, I beg your pardon. And that was a pretty comfortable win, even though it was 24-13. I thought that was a rather dominant performance by Oklahoma this past weekend. I was very impressed by what I saw there. Outgaining Michigan 408 to 288. Mateer carrying the ball for 74 yards, 19 carries. But here's the situation for Oklahoma, right? You play Michigan at home. You go to Temple, where I'm sure Lincoln Financial Field is going to be rocking for Temple at noon Eastern. But then you come back home and you play Auburn, which got a little extra juice in it, right? Because who's the quarterback for Auburn? That would be Jackson Arnold. This is your classic sandwich spot. Now, can Casey Keeler, in his first year at Temple, keep this thing competitive? That remains to be seen. We have seen a little bit of hoot love, owl love in the market. So that was one sandwich spot. Another one from a sandwich situation. How about Illinois? Illinois goes down to Duke, gets the win, and congrats to all of you who laid the chalk with Illinois. You can say it was an easy win. I don't think it was an easy win, but still, you got there, and I think you were the right side, even though Duke continued to shoot themselves in the foot all throughout that game. Muff punt, turnovers, lack of red zone execution, yada, yada, yada. We have seen Duke love into the betting market here this week as they take on Tulane. But regardless, Illinois gets the win. Solid win for old Burt going down there to Durham and getting the victory. And now Illinois, before they go to Bloomington, which was announced this week as a primetime ABC or NBC game, I apologize, and now a top 10 ranking, got to welcome in the old Broncos of Western Michigan. Western Michigan, tough loss. They let one slip to their fingertips against Texas, North Texas at home. I got to do a little more digging on this one, but feels like a good spot to look at Western Michigan if you can get four full touchdowns here with the Broncos against Illinois. Once again, the situation is this. They just went to Duke, got a nice win. Next week, they play Indiana in a top 25 showdown, primetime NBC. And this week, it's a night game, but you're playing Western Michigan at home. So another situational spot. Two more, and then we'll take a break and welcome in the Bear. How about Missouri? Missouri, the border war, they hadn't played it for, 15 years? Those are two fan bases that do not like each other. And Missouri went out and got the win. It was on bad beats. It was a late cover for anyone who had the Jayhawks. I actually did not play that game. I thought I was going to be on Kansas. I ultimately did not play it. And thankful that I did not play that one as Missouri wins the border war 42-31 over Kansas. And they were down early in that game. Bo Pribula might be pretty special as a quarterback. We'll see as the season goes on, but 30 of 39, three touchdowns. He can run it as well, even though he didn't have a big running game per se against Kansas. But Missouri, as you know, they don't go on the road till, the middle of October. But next week, they welcome in pretty stiff competition in South Carolina, currently ranked number 11. And this week, they play the old Ragin' Cajuns of Louisiana. There was some news out of Ragin' Cajun land as Walker Howard, the former fringe five-star recruit, is done for the season. He is out with an oblique injury. They beat McNeese this past week, lost the season opener to Rice. The backup quarterback is Daniel Beal. So I might have to get some insight from my guy Jimmy Ott down there in Baton Rouge, how the backup looks there for ULL, but great spot to back the Ragin' Cajuns, but they're going to have to turn to a backup quarterback. DraftKings at 27.5 for that game. Little look ahead, letdown spot. Lastly, how about SMU? Yes, they're not coming off a win, but SMU letting one slip through their fingertips. And look, sometimes you bet a team like Duke and it does not come home. Sometimes you bet a team like Baylor and you're a bit fortunate to have that one come home, as it felt like Baylor had no chance of winning that game in the fourth quarter. Sawyer Robertson put on an absolute show in that contest. Baylor's defense, by the way, quick aside, God, they are bad, man. That is a bad defensive football team. But Sawyer Robertson doing a great job of righting what's wrong on the defense. Over 600 yards of offense for the Baylor Bears against SMU. But you play Baylor, you get your hearts ripped out of your chest. Next week, you've got the rivalry game with TCU on the road. And this week, you have to go to Missouri State. Missouri State, welcome to FBS football. This was actually a game that I think we circled over the summer when I was doing a situational spot podcast. Missouri State catching 27 against the Ponies at home. First home game as an FBS team. Missouri State, by the way, getting a nice win last week over Marshall. So Missouri State 1-1. And shout out to anyone who had the under on Marshall win total. That was probably a game you didn't know if you'd get, and you did. And Missouri State plus 27 this week in a particular sandwich spot. We'll get to best bets as we always do on Thursday's podcast. But just want to hit some situational spots there, some intriguing angles. Hey, just a reminder, folks, this broadcast of VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Rainbow Authentics, the official source for game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards. For your favorite University of Hawaii student-athletes, every item tells a story, whether it's a game-worn jersey, signed ball, or unique collectibles. You're capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. I don't know if you caught this, if you were up late on Saturday night, early Sunday morning, as Hawaii took care of business against Sam Houston, a losing bet for me. I had half a unit on the under and half a unit on the Bearcats with a K. Hawaii was the right side the whole way, but the two pick sixes, not ideal if you have the under in that one. But on the sidelines, we did see Micah Alahato, who was out with that ankle injury, wearing a gold Rainbow Authentics hat. So pretty cool to see it represented there on the sidelines of that Hawaii game. So beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive custom gear, Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your best at every game day. So check it out, rainbowauthentics.com, rainbowauthentics.com. And those unique items help support Hawaii Athletics. Mahalo to our friends, Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. Quick break. On the other side, the Bear, Chris Felica from Fox and the Bear Bets Podcast. We're going to do overreaction or market correction with the Bear. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, a good friend of VSIN and a gentleman who tagged me in a tweet earlier this week. I said, you know what? Might be worth to have this gentleman on the podcast. Chris the Bear Felica. You know him. You love him. Former champ of the Circa Friday Football Invitational. Maybe we'll win it this year. 4-3 start. You can catch those picks every Friday. You can catch the Bear Bets podcast four times a week. Putting me to shame. Now, I will say, in my defense, you only do three college pods, so right. it doesn't make me look too bad on this podcast feed. And of course, you can catch them every Saturday morning, big noon kickoff. You know, I guess I shouldn't have you on, Bear, because you've got a college football pod and your show is exactly up against my tailgate show. I don't know what I'm doing. This is poor job by me. I'm bringing on the competition.
I love it. Get a little crow. You can listen to your show and have Big Noon on, and then put you on mute whenever I talk.
That's what we're talking about right there. That's why you get paid the big bucks. But
by the way, you know him, you love him. I don't know if a lot of people that don't love me right now for my my take on scheduling by pointing out the Big Ten schedule this week and. Like, yeah, remember this when everyone's killing the SEC in November. Like, but my point is these games are happening anyway. What the SEC is doing is actually smart. Give your team an opportunity to get a break or a little bit of a breather in November. Like 8-9 conference games in a row is hard. It's a grind. So like the fact that the Big Ten is puts all these non-conference games early, kind of hurt yourself later when you're going back to back through that conference grind. But yeah, the games are going to happen. Just use them to your benefit. And then of course everybody certainly agreed with my Illinois Duke take this past week, and then of course my college football stadium. So, but I do love it. I mean, it's why, like, if people didn't care and the opinions and the statements didn't resonate, I certainly wouldn't have a job, and I appreciate everybody out there. Even the haters and losers, as some might say, right?
Oh, no, it's I have one troll on Twitter who anytime I put up a screenshot of Kyle Hamilton almost blocking the field goal on Sunday Night Bear, and immediately the response was, yeah, like Notre Dame, almost got to stop. So I'm like, okay, all right, thank you. Appreciate that. But yes, that's the beauty of this sport and why we love it so much and why a place like Stark Vegas with a 2-10 football team a year ago can be raucous like it was on Saturday night. A lot I want to get into with you. We're going to play a game called Overreaction or Market Correction. We're going to get into some of those games. But I got to start. I haven't talked to you in person since your Canes were the right side and got there. And I listened to the podcast. And 3-0 for you, Jeff, and Sammy Boy. So well done by the trio there. My under got a little sweaty, but we ultimately got there. What was your takeaway from Notre Dame-Miami? We haven't seen Notre Dame since. They play Texas A&M this weekend. Miami, basically haven't seen them since, as they played Bethune-Cookman. They get USF, which is now a very interesting game heading into Saturday on the CW. What was your overall takeaways from Labor Day weekend, Sunday night down in the U?
My takeaway, I'll give you the Notre Dame takeaway first, is that that's certainly going to be the best defense that Miami faces all year long. And I think if you look at where CJ – it was weird. I think – that Denbrock almost called that game to kind of, I don't want to say justify CJ Carr starting, but to kind of get him involved in the game early and throw and throw and throw. And maybe, Did it hurt their offense early in the game by not getting Price and Love involved early? Maybe. But by the end of the game, Carr looked so much more comfortable. And of those young quarterbacks on opening week, whether it was Carr, Arch Manning, Ty Simpson, whoever else, I thought C.J. Carr handled the stage better than any of the other guys did, for sure. So it'd be interesting to see if they can move that forward, and he can build on that with a tough game coming up this week against A&M. But it's hard for me to – like, I don't want to be the guy to say I told you so, but, like, everything that I had heard from within the program in Miami about Carson Beck, about Malachi Toney, about the offensive line, about the improved second, like everything about Bain losing and Mesidor being problem, like everything I had heard, like it played out. So like I wasn't surprised at what they did on Sunday night and how good they looked on the offensive line and how good they looked on the defensive side of the ball and this renewed passion and fire that Carson Beck has right now. Like everything that I kind of expected, I saw. Now the question is going to be, where do you go from here now that you have the expectations of being a 17-point favorite or whatever it is against USF off of a win against Florida, being expected to handle Florida at home next week if the Gators do wind up losing at LSU? It was never going to be a situation – like, I could totally understand and get people who didn't want to buy in because, look, we've been told time and time again – that, oh, this could be the year, this could be the year. And until you actually see it, you're not going to want to buy in. But it's funny because you look at the title odds. I think BetMGM still had them like 25-1 to win the title, longer than like Clemson, longer than like Alabama, like longer than a bunch of teams. And I'm like, really? Like, I think there's still a chance here in to bet Miami in some of these national title playoff and ACC markets.
Yeah, I was just looking at the ACC market at DraftKings because I just pulled it up. Plus 230, so they're still not the favorite, but Clemson's odds continue to shrink, grow, plus 210. You know, to your point about Miami, and you obviously know this program as well as anybody in the media space, I was skeptical of the – I guess skeptical is not the right word. I was on the other side of the skepticism of Carson Beck. I was like, you know, his numbers weren't that bad, and I kept referencing it all summer, Bear, which was the David Hale article over at ESPN.com where he did the blind resumes. I mean, his numbers were almost exactly identical to Garrett Nussmeier, who also has looked the part in his, you know, big start there on the road against Clemson. What I didn't know, and I got to give you credit for on your pod, which was the wide receivers. I kind of fell into the, hey, this is an elite secondary Notre Dame has. Malachi, I just didn't know that Malachi Toney was going to be this dynamic of an athlete. CJ Daniels, you know, kind of dropped off a little bit when he went to LSU. Oh. But man, they looked the part. And I'll say this about Miami, and this is a positive, because I don't think Notre Dame – maybe the rest of the year will be bullied up front like they were. Miami, and a bunch of Notre Dame beat reporters, Bear, said this, Miami out Notre Dame'd Notre Dame. They were the tougher team on the offensive and defensive line. And I know it came down to a field goal, and I thought that was poor clock management. And I thought Cristobal got a little too complacent, you know, playing for a 47-yard field goal. It was nothing but net, but still a little bit of a worry there. But I think the lines, and you mentioned it, Reuben Bain, my God, that dude. He was already, I think, projected by McShay to be a first-round pick, but it felt like on that Sunday night, he made himself even more money the way he played.
And it's funny because in my midst of travels, planes, trains, and automobiles this past weekend, whether I was in New York, New Jersey, Michigan, Iowa, I was looking to see if they had any updated defensive award prices up, and none of the books that I saw did, because I was ready to make a nice healthy size wager on Bain to win the Nagurski and or the Hendricks, but they're not there. But people can have whatever criticisms they want on Mario Cristobal with some of the game management issues that he's had in the past. And then he and Shannon Dawson came out afterwards and basically said, yeah, we did go conservative, but we wanted to make Notre Dame burn their timeouts because we felt like they couldn't go the length of the field with no timeouts and against our defensive line late. So,
which they were right about.
They were right about that. But the fact – you talk about the lines, and it's something that Notre Dame has done as well. Like, I don't know how in today's era of college football you can survive – as an elite program without having a maniacal recruiter as your head coach. This is Mario is built. They have prioritized trenches, offensive line, defensive line in their recruiting classes. And then they have utilized the portal to plug in quarterback, defensive back, what skill position guys. So that's, I think, kind of a model for people moving forward. Like you look at, I mean, CJ Carr might be the rare instance where you get this five-star blue chip recruit at quarterback, you bring him in and he turns out to be the guy and he stays there for his entire tenure. But I think the model probably is going to be more of Dante Moore is at UCLA, plays a year, Oregon pays a ton of money to go bring him to Eugene, or Carson Beck is at Georgia for 3-4 years, has another year. Let's go out and get an experienced guy that we feel like he's our kind of our missing piece. So I think that blue chip, that model of like build within the trenches, line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball, plug and play in the portal elsewhere, that seems to be a method that might have the best bang for your buck.
Well, the last year's national championship game had a pair of transfer portal quarterbacks, right? Will Howard for Ohio State, Riley Leonard for Notre Dame, the team who went undefeated a year ago, transfer portal quarterback with Dylan Gabriel up there at Oregon. So, yeah, it was a unique year and certainly something I know you guys talked about, I talked about a bunch, was you've got these teams with a ton of talent, but some uncertainties at the quarterback position. And, you know, it's just one big game, but looks like Oklahoma made a pretty good choice in going to the portal. Yeah. And getting John Mateer. Bear, I want to transition to overreaction to market correction because DraftKings is putting up look-ahead lines on Wednesdays for the next week game. And I'm going to start doing this every week where I'm going to take a screenshot of all those and see how much they change. And I think this is something that you do a lot. This isn't, you know, breaking the atom here, but just looking at, all right, are we overreacting or are we correcting to maybe what we were wrong about? So let's go to this Miami USF game. I laid 16 when the number got down. The look ahead line for those wondering was Miami 18.5. It was at 16. It's now back up 17. There's some 17.5s out there. And this isn't me, Bear, trying to, you know, for lack of a better term, shit on USF. But like when you play Boise and then you play Florida and now you're going to go up against a team that's as physical as Miami, I think USF's really good. I think Alex Golish deserves a ton of credit, but what's going to happen this week? Everybody out there is going to say, oh, that's a lot of points, right? Mm-hmm. I just, to me, Bear, I feel like this was a bit of an overreaction to what we saw at Florida and Miami playing Bethune-Cookman a little out of sight, out of mind. What do you make of the overreaction or market correction on Miami USF?
I think there's probably a little bit of an overreaction on the side of supporting USF. Like Miami put 50 on them last time they played, and this is certainly a better Miami team. And yeah, you could say that the USF team is indeed better as well, but I think for the look, I don't want to say the worst possible thing for USF was beating Florida, because that's a win that's going to have them squarely in the group of five playoff race. That's a win that's going to get Alex Golish power five job next year. But in terms of the Miami game this week, this means that they are on Miami's radar, that they have Miami's full attention. There's not going to be any sneaking in at Hard Rock, maybe a sleepy look-ahead game with Florida next week. They're going to see ranking next to South Florida. They're going to see that they beat Florida. Miami will be – I think if you look at Florida, like Florida's offensive line is a disaster. Like 11 tackles for loss against CW Post. I'm allowed to call him CW Post. Being a Long Islander, I'm not saying LIU. It's CW Post.
Shout out to the Sharks, by the way, beating Eastern Michigan this past weekend. Yeah,
exactly. And then last week, South Florida, 7 tackles for loss. They're not going to get in the backfield to be as disruptive with that Miami offensive line. I think Miami held some guys out last week, Lyle and some other guys who could have played if this were a big week. I know Miami has Florida next week, but I think this is a big Miami win this week. And the best thing that for Miami was South Florida pulling that upset, because now there's no look ahead whatsoever.
Yeah, I kind of thought it would happen last weekend, and I was wrong. I didn't give it out in the podcast, thankfully, but I did personally bet Florida at, I think, 17 or 17 and a half, and obviously that never had a chance of coming home. So I'm back in on Miami here. I just think, yeah, I think this is a bit of an overreaction, anything under 17. A game that you tweeted out, which you have coined the phrase, and I'll text you from time to time, Bear, hey, is this going to be the dog with fleas? This Tennessee-Georgia game is wildly fascinating to me. So we know that Tennessee will be without their starting corners again. And look, Georgia really hasn't really played anybody yet. And the market's going bonkers here. So the look-ahead line for this on Friday was Georgia 6.5. It's now Georgia 3.5. And if you go to the Summer Bear, Chris Andrews, your good friend over at the South Point and my friend as well,
11?
Had this game at 7.5 in the game of the year line. So we're down to 3.5, and I'm a little confused on the support for Tennessee. Like, is it because you beat Syracuse? Well, Syracuse needed overtime to beat UConn and was very, very fortunate. Bad beat, by the way, if you took the closing number on UConn, by the way. Explain this one to me. Is this an overreaction or market correction?
It's a massive overreaction. I think people are forgetting that Georgia has played the last two games without their two best offensive linemen, who will be back this week. I get your concern, or anyone who bet Tennessee's concern. I know there were, I think, a couple of syndicates that bet Tennessee yesterday, or the day before, I should say, at the open, and drove this down. But I bet it. Once it hit 3.5, I bet it. I just not thinking it was going to get any lower, and I'd be shocked if it kind of did. I get people's reservations about Gunnar Stockton and going on the road, but I think the one thing that maybe none of us really realized and really factoring in is that this Georgia defense, I think, is much better than people expect it to be with the losses that they had. You lose Mikel Williams, you lose Jalen Walker, you lose Malachi Starr, you lose a bunch of guys. The defense is great. And if you look at how Kirby Smart's defense has just absolutely manhandled Tennessee in the four games since Josh Heupel has been there, none of them have been close. Tennessee's averaged 14 points a game, allowed 18 sacks in the four games. Only six drives have even reached the red zone in the last 3 years. So, and now you have a Tennessee defense without some defensive backs. This could be a game where maybe Georgia's able to maybe stretch the field out a little bit with those offensive linemen coming back and give Gunnar Stockton a little bit of time. Yeah, I laid the 3.5 and was happy to do it.
Yeah, I do wonder if this is one of those games where Dabo's just kind of being quiet. You know, you played Austin Peay, you won by, 22?
Kirby's being quiet, you mean.
Oh, I'm sorry, not yet. Dabo. I was just looking up something about Antonio Williams' status, and I had Dabo on my Kirby. Yes, Kirby is being quiet. Yeah.
What was the Antonio Williams status?
Day-to-day. So let's get into that.
That means he's not playing.
Yeah, so Dabo, when asked about it regarding his status for Georgia Tech, Antonio Williams, their star wide receiver, and I wouldn't say the lone reason, but one of the big reasons I like this Clemson team so much was I felt like they had first-round talent at the wide receiver position, and Antonio Williams dealing with a hamstring. So let's get to that game, because Clemson last week was 7.5-point favorites at Georgia Tech, and I think if I could speak for my partner on Thursdays, Matt Eumanns, he would have been all over Georgia Tech. He would have loved that home dog spot. Obviously, Haynes King, I think he sat out last week, right, against the FCS opponent, Gardner Webb. I want to double-check that, but regardless,
right.
Is this an overreaction, market correction, or maybe a little bit in between? Mentioning South Point, if you've got access to those numbers, it's all the way down to 3 at South Point, 3.5 market wide out there. Clemson, this number's moved 4 points, Bear, for Clemson at Georgia Tech.
I think it's a market correction, but like you said, a little bit of an overreaction. Like down to three, I think, is a little bit of a bridge too far. But again, I wasn't as high on Clemson entering the year as a lot of people were. So I would not have made them seven and a half in Georgia Tech's game. I think I probably would have opened maybe in no man's land at five or so and see where it went. I'm not sure Georgia Tech has looked great, certainly in that opener at Colorado, letting CU hang around and winning that game late with the Haynes King run. But at the same time, while I wasn't necessarily high on Clemson, three and a half on the road at Georgia Tech, like I don't know. I bet Clemson is as well at 3.5 just because I didn't think we'd see a three. I think maybe last week in the second half that might have been the wake up call that Clemson needed to be like, all right, let's get our heads out of our you know what and play better. I think defensively, they'll play a lot better and we'll see if the Georgia Tech offense is able to move the ball. I don't know if Georgia Tech defensively is going to be able to do the same things that LSU were able to do on the defensive line to really disrupt Klubnik. And the biggest concern, that would be the – if I'm a Clemson fan, the concern I would have is if they go to Georgia Tech and can't run there, that's a mad – like I don't – it was it's almost – I mean – I don't know what's going on behind the scenes at Clemson with the freshman back, but for Dabo and that offense to like go into the season, oh yeah, we're fine with the converted wide receiver at running back. Like that's a little bold to think you're going to go to the places that people think you can go with a converted wide receiver at running back. So I did play Clemson. I did lay it. And I hope I hope my market correction / overreaction, well, whatever you want to call it, I hope my Georgia Tech semi-dog with fleas viewpoint here is right. But I feel much better about laying the points with Georgia than I do Clemson, because I do think this is a little bit of, like, this is where we'll find out how right I was about Clemson this year.
So I don't know if this will be a dog with fleas situation. It might be, but maybe more in our betting circles because of how Diego Pavia has done as an underdog. South Carolina last week, I thought the number was crazy. 8.5 as a favorite against Vanderbilt. And then Vanderbilt goes out and destroys Virginia Tech. I want to take a quick side note here because I'm not trying to get you in trouble. This was my tweet from Saturday night. At what point, Bear, are we going to stop saying that Lane Stadium at night is a challenging environment? Like,
Once they play Enter Sandman and we're on the field, it's all downhill from there.
I mean, look, two things could be true, right? They could have maybe the coolest entry at night. They're all jumping up and down. You know, we're touching a rock. We're doing all this stuff. They are not an imposing. I mean, how many big games, Bear? As a Notre Dame fan, I think back to, what was it, 2019. It was like a one-point game at half. Notre Dame won by 20. Like, what are we – at what point – and I think your former podcast partner made this point on his podcast with Van Pelt. Like, when are we going to stop doing this? Two things can be right. It could be an awesome entrance at nighttime, and they also could be beyond mediocre as a football product at nighttime.
And they've been beyond mediocre as a football product for a while. I can remember 2005, Virginia Tech's in the college football BCS title game race, whatever you want to call it. And Miami went up there and absolutely just annihilated them. I think it was 23-3 or something like that. That was like the last time Miami was really relevant on the national stage. But, I mean, there's no bigger Metallica fan than me, but that was like a fireable offense by Brent Pry. On Saturday night, you're up 20-17, fourth and a foot from your 34 2/3 yard line, and you punt. A surrender punt. Like, just wave the white flag right there, and you didn't stop Vanderbilt the rest of the game. It's funny, like, you know, I bet Virginia Tech in the game. And it was funny because 2 days after I put it on the pod and in my column, or day and a half or whatever, you know how we all have those people in the industry that we love to fade.
Sure.
And like if we're on the rights, if they're on the same side as us in a game, it's like, oh shit. That happened with Virginia Tech. And right then and there, I'm like, I wish I could have this pick back right now. Because I had bet it when it went down to like pick 'em, and I bet it then, and then it went up to 1.5, 2, and I'm like, God, no, this is bad. And look, I don't get this line, but I think the battle between Brent, I think you could have like Billy Napier, Brett Pry, Mike McDaniel, and like whoever else you want, like line up with. Like I think all those John Brian Daboll, you should have all those teams like get together and create a conference call and like fire head coaches at the same time. That would be kind of a fun.
I mean, for people who didn't watch it on Saturday night, halftime, Virginia Tech's up 20-10. Yeah. Here is the second half. Vanderbilt, touchdown drive. Virginia Tech, 3 and out. Vanderbilt, touchdown drive. Virginia Tech, 3 and out. Vanderbilt, touchdown drive. Virginia Tech, 3 and out. Vanderbilt, touchdown drive. Virginia Tech, 4 plays, turnover, downs. Vanderbilt, touchdown drive. That is annihilation in the second half.
That is a damning indictment, and I would almost – I don't want to say quit, but that reeks of players who have tapped out and, like, want to move on and, like, aren't – whatever message the coaching staff is trying to deliver to them, it either isn't being delivered, it isn't being processed, or doesn't want to be delivered. So the things are not good in Blacksburg, but I don't get this line at all. And it's funny, I sent out a tweet about like AP pollsters and some of the ridiculous results-based rankings that are being completely ignored. You can have whatever opinion you want. That's fine. Like I have an opinion that I would vote LSU number one. And that I people would say, oh, you're wrong. It should be Ohio State. Yeah, you're right. It could be Ohio State. That's very, very easy.
Are you asking why Vanderbilt's behind South Carolina?
I am asking why, like, Vanderbilt's like, what, getting a vote? What Vandy did to Virginia Tech at Lane was far more dominating.
Oh, yeah.
And impressive than what South Carolina did to Virginia Tech in Atlanta. I mean, South Carolina had the scripted opening drive. They had a punt return and a bomb touchdown pass in the fourth quarter. Like, Virginia Tech defense kept them in charge. So, like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this game because I think a lot of people feel and are seeing the same thing now. Like, why is Vandy this big of a dog? But they continually deliver – as an underdog, the coaching advantage that was on the exhibition on Saturday night, but between Clark Lee and his staff and Brent Pry and his staff, it was clear as day. I love Shane Beamer, and I think he's got a good staff as well. So I don't think there's going to be a massive coaching edge one way or another there. But you know that Vandy, the culture of that Vandy program has completely changed. And I would be surprised if Vandy got blown out here.
Yeah, this is one of those ones where I'm like, I really want to bet Vandy, but it does feel a little bit trendy. That all being said, I'm not in on this South Carolina team. I bet Virginia Tech week one. I thought they should have covered that game, right? There's a punt return. They shot themselves in the foot a whole bunch. So, yeah, it's funny that you get a game this early on in the season where Vanderbilt goes to raucous, daunting environment, Lane Stadium, and smashes Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech, and South Carolina in a neutral site. It's kind of ho-hum. Hey, we got a late touchdown with Nicholas Harbor. And by the way, that dude, whew, that is a special specimen of
By the way, now you got to back up at your Sandman with Sandstorm.
That's right.
That's a great place to see a game.
Now, I will say, yes, South Carolina.
Have you been to Williams Bryce?
I have not. No, I have not.
Great place to see a game.
You know, I actually have never been to Lane Stadium. I grew up, you know, only about three and a half. Virginia Tech, you've been there, I imagine. Blacksburg.
Yes, many
times.
That is
nowhere's in Ville. No,
it's one of those. It's the once you get there, it's great. But that drive to Roanoke is a – is nervy, let's put it to you that way.
Shout out to Roanoke. I've been there actually far too many times calling minor league baseball, but no one needs to give a crap about that. All right, a couple more before I let you run. What do we do with Duke and Tulane? This is pretty fascinating. I think a service gave them out, Duke, that is, on Monday, or maybe I think it was early Tuesday morning. So Duke, a team that I think you and I were both on Duke last week, and I know a bunch of people that I respect were on Duke. And ultimately, you know, it was that proverbial pros versus Joes game, and congrats to the Joes. They got a victory. I don't know what to do with this game because I bet Northwestern week one, and that was the dead wrong side against Tulane. So this was three earlier this week. We moved from 1.5 to 3, and now there are spots that have Duke as the favorite. So I'm kind of conflicted on this Mensa return game down to the Big Easy.
I'd bet Duke if I was in one of those pick'em kind of pools, sure, and I need to play this game. I don't know if I'll bet Duke with real money. Look, I mean, people were having a field day coming at me afterwards. Oh, say it was a blowout. Like, if you thought that game was a blowout,
you and I
watched two completely different games. You had Duke muffing a punt on their own 18-yard line. You throw a pick at the 12-yard line. You fumble at the 11 going in. You fumble at the 30. Like you're talking high-leverage touchdowns. And Duke's defensive line was actually getting after Altmaier pretty good early in the game. And then finally in the fourth quarter after turnover number 4 and 5, it was like, all right, enough's enough. We have nothing left to give. But early on, the Duke defense did play well. Duke averaged 7 yards a play against Illinois. So they can clearly move the ball. So, look, it's kind of interesting that you got Mensa going back there, and I'm sure the Tulane players in that locker room will kind of want a little bit of revenge and feel slighted that he left Tulane to go to Duke. But if I had to play this game, I would look at playing Duke and just obviously finding a shop that has the best number, whether it's Duke plus one or pick whatever you can get.
All right. I know we've gone long, so I want to hit on two before I let you run, Bear. LSU, Florida. So this was 7 before Florida went out and lost to USF. LSU, shout out to the boys from Ruston in a great situational spot, never in doubt with the plus 38. So much appreciated to the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. Over the summer, it was 7. I'm wondering, I think we saw a little bit of movement back towards Florida today. Is this an overreaction? What are we making on LSU Florida? Is this a buy low spot for Sunbelt Billy on the road?
I wouldn't even call it a buy low because I think we've seen, I mean, we saw 9.5 and we've seen people betting Florida, and it's kind of right back kind of where we thought it would be. 7.5 at DraftKings, eats it like the Heritage and Offshore as well. So like, I think it's kind of where Florida is going to be an ugly side this week, certainly coming off of that game. But again, I think the spot is probably good for LSU, being that you had a week to come down from the win at Clemson, the predictable flat spot last week. Now you're at home against a desperate team. And I think as long as Brian Kelly and staff can kind of just not show their players the final score from last week's game, they're going to be in a good spot. But again, the biggest concern that I have in this game is Florida's offensive line. Like, I don't think they're good at all. I'm not convinced DJ Lagway is fully healthy. I think we saw that by Baker and that defense, what they did to the Clemson offensive line in week one and shut down the Tigers offense. I could see a similar type of situation here. We're looking at a total of 48, 49 or so. Yeah, I could see this being an under type game. Well, a big revenge spot too for LSU after the embarrassing loss that they had to Florida last year. So I don't know if I want to lay it, but I think under is probably a good look here.
And then backyard brawl, I was texting with you. I initially thought this was an overreaction, but now we're getting word of the injuries. They're going to be without White, their running back. Bray is out for the year, their wide receiver. So it does feel like this was 2.5 last week in favor of Pitt, now up to 7. Is this market correction on what looks to be a pretty bad team for Rich Rod year one?
Yeah, I think it is market correction because, again, early on in the year, I don't think we can really – know right away after one game or going into a year. Some of these numbers might be a little out of whack based on priors that don't necessarily exist anymore. But I think this is definitely a correction, maybe a little bit of an overcorrection just because of the injuries. But I think this is much closer to what this number should be. I will not be betting this game.
You can get his picks, the Circa Friday Football Invitational, off to a 4-3 start there. He's won it before. He's been top three another time. And, of course, you can catch all his plays on the Bear Bets podcast and every Saturday, Big Noon Kickoff, where he will be in lovely Chicago. Are you guys setting up on that unique field there? Best view in all of college?
Absolutely. I can't wait to check it out. I can't wait. I'm unfortunately going to be missing the dinner at Gibson's on Thursday night, but I'm hoping to convince my ride from the airport to stop at Portillo's. Ooh. On the way back from O'Hare to bring back little Portillo's back to the room, watch a little Thursday night football, tune into a little VSiN primetime, or and then maybe convincing maybe a little Giordano's deep dish for lunch on Friday. So we got everything planned out.
Not too shabby. Bear, much appreciated, sir.
Of course, brother. Be well.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Thanks again to Chris Felica, the Bear, for jumping on the podcast, giving us his thoughts for this upcoming Week 3. And we talked a little bit about where he will be on location this weekend as Big Noon Kickoff headed to Chicago for Northwestern and Oregon. And how about Oregon, man? I talked about it on the College Football Tailgate Show. Just a reminder, the College Football Tailgate Show that I host starts at 9 a.m. Eastern now and can be seen on Marquee Network in Chicago, Masson in the D.C. area, Nesson Plus in New England, and of course, all of our content at VSiN can be heard on Sirius XM channel 158. But we even talked about on the podcast the poking of the bear, thinking back to 2023, where they're playing for clicks, we're playing for wins, that infamous pregame speech that he gave Oregon prior to their dismantling of Colorado when Colorado was undefeated heading into, I think it was a Week 4 game, and they were up 35-0 at halftime. Yeah, well, Mike Gundy kind of poked that bear, right? 69-3 final score, pretty easy cover. I laid a little bit in the first half. I think we talked about it on the podcast there. Should have laid everything. Alt lines, done it all with Oregon as they won that one. And maybe Dante Moore is a guy that we aren't given enough love to. I don't know. The Oregon quarterback, who was a once five-star recruit, went to UCLA, mixed results there, goes up to Oregon, sits behind Dylan Gabriel. So, yeah, we will keep our eyes peeled on Dante Moore. Maybe a little bit better than we expected. And, boy, I think the game against Penn State is becoming more and more intriguing. A bunch of people that I respect had some Oregon under. I didn't bet over or under on Oregon. I didn't bet them to make the playoff or miss the playoff. I've kind of left on the sidelines for that particular squad, but pretty interested to see how that game plays out on September 27th. You know, Penn State really has gotten off to a phenomenal start, right, to start this season, beating the likes of what, FIU last week in Nevada in Week 1. Mighty Villanova coming to town this week, and then they have a bye week before the showdown with Oregon at the end of the September, which will be great. The atmosphere, no doubt, will be incredible for Oregon at Penn State. They got their wish. They get a whiteout game there, so we'll talk more about that when we get closer and closer to it. I did want to wrap the podcast, trying to do this every week, just taking a look at some injuries, and we'll start with Northwestern. Big loss for them. They'll be without their leading rusher, Cam Porter, for the season. So that is a big blow for the Purple Cats of Northwestern. This is a Northwestern team that I was bullish on Week 1. I thought they would have a chance to go down and beat Tulane. They obviously did not. They beat Western Illinois a week ago, but a big loss there. Cam Porter, hate to see that. A guy who's been at Northwestern for 5 years, leading rusher, and he's going to be sidelined for the year. So big loss there, as they are 27-point underdogs to Oregon. I think there is still a 28 out there. We mentioned it already. Louisiana, they'll be losing their starting quarterback, Walker Howard. Reports are he's done for the year. Oblique injury. This was an interesting nugget, and we talked about this briefly with the Bear, and that is the situation for Tennessee. So they will be without both their starting corners again. Jermod McCoy and Ricky Gibson not expected to be back, this per Pete Thamel on Monday. McCoy still recovering from an ACL tear in January. Gibson still expected to be out for an extended period of time. But as Pete Thamel did point out, transfer Colton Hood, who leads the SEC so far in PBUs with five, has played well. And also true freshman Ty Redman expected to start again for the Vols, a big-time recruit right there. So interesting note there regarding Tennessee and their injuries, as they will continue to be without two of their starting corners. West Virginia, after losing to Ohio, by the way, shout out to Colby Dant last week on this podcast, said he thought Ohio was live to win that game. They certainly did. Bobcats get it done against West Virginia. Market's going crazy on West Virginia up to 7, but they are without their leading rusher, Jaheim White. He's done for the year. Jaden Bray also done for the year. LSU, Tre'Dez Green, their tight end, he'll be out a couple of weeks. They thought maybe it could be more, so he will not play this weekend against Florida. Could be out a couple of weeks, but the expectation is for him to not miss the season. Good news for Texas A&M, as their stud left tackle, Trey Zune, he will play on Saturday against Notre Dame. Also, there were some thoughts that Marcel Reed was a little bit banged up. He will be playing, that according to Mike Elko. Speaking of Micah Elahada was seen at practice on Tuesday there for Hawaii. I would be very surprised if Elahada plays on Saturday against FCS Portland State, who has been hammered in their first three games of the season. If I were Timmy Chang, I would be holding Micah Elahada out and hoping that he is healthy and ready to go for the Fresno State game in 2 weeks. Staying in the Mountain West, Alex Orji out for the year for UNLV, as he had seemingly lost out the job to Anthony Calandria, the transfer from Virginia, but Orji done for the year. And lastly, this one just popped up. Louisville will be without their standout linebacker, that according to Matt Zenitz over at CBS Sports, Stanquan Clark. He's expected to miss a couple of weeks with a lower leg injury. Louisville has been relatively untested to this point. I guess that's not true. James Madison was a test. They were only up 7-6 at the half, and ultimately Louisville, depending on what number you got, did get home there, lands on 14. But they play Bowling Green next week and then Pittsburgh on the road. So they could be without one of their better defensive players here for a little bit. Hey, just a reminder, folks, we've got some great sponsors part of this podcast, including our friends at Kahala Shirts, the original Aloha shirt brand founded in Honolulu in 1936. Kahala has been at the heart of island style for nearly 90 years. Next year marks their 90th anniversary, a celebration of timeless craftsmanship, bold design, and Hawaii's rich cultural story. Most of Kahala's iconic Aloha shirts are still made in Hawaii using original prints and time-honored techniques that showcase the beauty of the islands. But Kahala also innovates with modern styles, offering stretchy performance shirts, cooling polos designed for golf, and comfortable shorts built for every adventure. Discover their full collection over at kahala.com. That's kahala.com, and you could shop their full collection online there. Also, check them out on Instagram at Kahala. Thanks again to Kahala, a proud sponsor of the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Another edition of Wednesdays with Wes, as well as, got to think of a name for Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews, his new endeavor, Pick Six Plus. You can check it out. We'll talk more about it coming up on Wednesday's podcast. As a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe. Another strong week, another week in the top 200 of iTunes podcasts. Let's keep that rolling. Continue that momentum. Let's keep it rocking and rolling. And also, our Thursday episode is up on YouTube every single week as well. And we had a bunch of views the first couple of weeks, so let's keep that rolling As you know, 3 episodes each and every week here on this feed as we continue to roll along here in the college football season. Another episode tomorrow, one on Thursday. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.